Good morning. Today is Friday, already the 8th of January. Joining us this morning is not number one, it's number two.
That's me.
Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay. And you even responded with a smile on your face.
Always. You got to smile these days or else you'll go crazy.
I guess. All righty, Winston, you want to slide the book over here so we can take a shot?
Oh.
New book, dude.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Actually, it's been it seems to be a lot simpler so far. We're getting in the neighborhood on this one.
So okay.
That's not a bad deal. Ever wonder why zero scores in tennis are called love?
I believe it has to do with the French language, where an egg is love or something like that, and the oval zero is reminiscent of an egg, so they call it love.
See, I told you you'd get close.
Did I get it?
Pretty close. In France, where tennis first became popular, a big round zero on the tennis scoreboard looked like an egg and was, in fact, called an egg, which in French is l'œuf. Okay, fine. That's not even close. When tennis became popular in this country, America, Americans copied the French and also called the zero score l'œuf, but pronounced it love.
Okay.
So maybe that is almost how you pronounce it. L-O-E-U-F. I took German in high school.
Yeah, I was Spanish.
Good. Well, just kind of let it sit there then.
All right.
Oh. Well, you guys have been kind of running around halfway busy here the last little bit, huh?
Yeah. You know, it tends to be a busy time of year for us, you know, with the cold weather setting in and the rain and whatnot, between traffic collisions and people's floor furnaces that have been coming on that have things stacked over the top of them, causing fires and whatnot. It tends to be a busy time of year for us.
So normal, predictable?
Yeah, and we try to get out ahead of it with public messaging and whatnot. And I know that law enforcement, too, with the traffic collision side of things, are trying to get out, you know, basically telling people to slow down and give themselves extra time to get places. But the reason why we're still here is not everybody listens, so.
Yeah, ain't that the truth. Ain't that the truth. Medical aids, is there seasonality to those as well?
Not really that I'm aware of. I obviously, as a chief officer, I don't respond to as many medicals as I used to. But during the summer months, we obviously see some more environmental emergencies, people getting overheated and whatnot. But typically in the wintertime, it's pretty standard. We might see some people that are housing challenged, have some more cold weather things happening. But nothing I can really put my finger on that would be more seasonal.
Now, in talking with your peers and the guys across the street, not in the parking lot, the other guys
right.
calendar dates do cause influx based on paydays, and you can also tell when drugs are new in the neighborhood.
True enough. Yeah, that does have, there is some effect there, you know, when people get the influx of money and are able to make purchases. We do see a little bit of a spike in overdoses and whatnot. Funny enough, too, on some holidays, we see some more depression-related medical aids and whatnot. Not just, what do you think?
Attempted suicide kind of thing?
You do sometimes, but a lot of times there's people that, especially older people, that are alone. They don't have anybody for the holidays, and they may have some sort of a medical issue that maybe is not an emergent issue, but they just want somebody there. And so they'll call 911, and we'll respond, and we're their contact.
The social engagement.
Absolutely. So, and it's sad, but, and obviously we don't want to see people abuse that, but, you know, not all medical aids have to do with blood pressures and things like that. Sometimes it's just a little bit of care from people that people
liquids
need.
Liquids on the floor from the body. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. First aid was not my favorite class in school. No way. Prescription overdoses or misuse.
Mm-hmm.
2-3 years ago, it was a big deal for the high school kids or junior high kids to raid the prescription, the medicine cabinet in the bathrooms.
Right.
Has that continued, or has that kind of gone down a little bit?
You know, I don't think that it hasn't gone away for sure, but I'm not aware that it's being increased at all. And now, especially, we used to, every every couple times every year we'd go to the high school for kids that had gotten into something, and they would do it at school for whatever reason. Obviously now with school being closed down and people was homeschooling and whatnot, we don't see that as often. And so I'm not aware of any spikes in that. But the problem still does remain, though, because if things are accessible, kids of all ages are going to get into it. So
I don't understand going after that instead of the traditional, the liquor cabinet.
I don't either. It was a lot different when I was in school, for sure.
Yeah, well, at least you didn't bring out the snowdrift thing. prescription misuse or a purposeful overdose?
I think both. I think, again, a lot of it is seasonal a lot of people perceive that as an easier way to do something that they normally wouldn't do as far as making an attempt on their life. But I think you see a lot of misuse as well, because people don't always follow the doctor's instructions with those things. And those things are powerful. I've never taken a painkiller in my life, but I only know the stories and what I've seen in the field. And it can definitely, if you don't listen to your doctor's instructions, and they're a doctor for a reason, you can easily misuse those things and cause yourself some great issues.
Yeah, or some embarrassing situations.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. So you don't see much of a change in the call volume, though, month in and month out. That's intriguing to me. I would have thought that there would have been a seasonality to it.
Right. And it seems like these days, at least this is my impression, and this is a complete gut impression, but usually when one type of call spikes, another one is on a low. Like during this time of year, we see chimney fires because people are burning things in their chimneys, obviously. During the summer, we don't see that as much, but that's usually taking the place. Mail takes its place, whether it's traffic collisions by more road traffic coming through the area for, being a 101 corridor, or brush fires that come up, vegetation fires. So something kind of takes its place as they ebb and flow.
One season exchanges.
Exactly.
With another. Imagine that.
Exactly.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. During the break, sharing that Angie and I were somewhere and saw one of your rigs go by, guns and horns blazing, followed by a second one, and then by one of the Suburbans. And it kind of brought to the top of our mind what are the protocols? How do you go through that process in making sure that everything is being done the most efficient way it can?
Absolutely. So in Eureka, we're fortunate that we have five fire stations that are staffed by our firefighters 24/7. And each of our platoons, we call them, we have A, B, and C platoon, which is the group of firefighters that works, is managed by a battalion chief. The battalion chief is the one that's in the fire SUV. They basically manage the crew on duty. They do the scheduling and whatnot. But also, if there's an incident, a fire, a large traffic collision, they respond and they become the incident commander. And they basically are in charge of making the decisions for the incident, calling for extra resources. We're fortunate in Eureka that we also have what we call a secondary duty officer, which is Chief Robertson or I. On the weekends and after hours, we carry a pager with us. And if it's a big incident, we can respond in and help with being an extra chief officer on the scene, being a safety officer, managing a certain section of an incident. Or if the other duty officer is tied up, we make sure that we have the primary duty there. And also, if our neighbors have an incident, we can send a chief officer to help them with the incident along with our fire units. And we still keep coverage for a chief officer in Eureka to be able to manage incidents as well.
Now, fire guys speak the same lingo, right?
Absolutely.
Pretty much?
Yes.
When you start getting other types, ambulance showing up, sheriff, local jurisdiction, law enforcement, CHP, Cal Fire is probably still fire in general terms. But when you start getting into that type of a scenario where you've got multiples from multiple areas, let's throw in the drug task force also as a variable. Now, does everybody speak the same language, or is the approach a little bit different?
I'll start off by saying that fire department's the best at doing it. And I'm not just saying that because we're biased, but we do it all the time with our incidents. We use what's
called routine for you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. We use what's called the incident command system. It's that simple. And law enforcement is actually trained in the incident command system as well, as is the ambulance and whatnot. Typically, if it's a large incident, they'll speak the same language as us, using basically, calling things, the leader of the incident is called the incident commander. We have different divisions that we work on and whatnot. But again, we do it the most. And coincidentally enough, California is the best at it. If you go to other areas, ICS, the incident command system, people jokingly call it incidents California style, because we're the biggest purveyors of it, and we do it the best. So anyways, what I was saying is with law enforcement, we do train together, because obviously on fire incidents, they're there to help us out with traffic control and whatnot, but there are also other incidents that are what we call multidisciplinary incidents. Say an active shooter situation where law enforcement is handling the criminal side of things and trying to find the shooter, whereas we're there to help manage the medical side of things. So we use what's called unified command under the incident command system to be able to speak the same language and help each other out and make sure that we're coordinating our efforts rather than working against each other.
So with all of that blending and I presume training together, et cetera, et cetera, the combined dispatch, it still continues to be a big outlier, I guess. Everything else is going together smooth, together.
Right.
And now we've got this one, except for, is part of this cross-training, similar training, everybody getting together stuff, do you see that as a logical extension down the road sometime? 5 weeks, 5 months, 5 years, 5 decades, but that is a kind of a missing piece in that equation?
I think so. We're fortunate with our dispatch center that they dispatch both police and fire. They speak both languages, whereas with some agencies, they only speak police. Some agencies only speak fire. And I think that one of the big advantages of combined dispatch is you have dispatchers who are, again, multidisciplinary. They can help. Dispatchers are, I used to be a dispatcher. Before I became a firefighter, I was a dispatcher for the Eureka Police Department. And the dispatcher does more than just answer the phones and talk on the radio. They are actually obviously screening calls. They're making decisions on what to send. And the more training and the more disciplines that somebody has to be able to rely on, the better they're going to be able to do their job and make decisions to do the most efficient service. So I think I'm a proponent of the consolidated dispatch. I think that down the road, I think that it would be, not only does it help give better service to the public, but it also gives better service to the firefighters and police officers that are depending on it. Because again, you have dispatchers who are highly trained in screening calls. They're able to make decisions and make our jobs a lot easier when it comes to responding to things.
Well, the thing, two elements seem to stand out for me in addition to some of the efficiencies, the economic efficiencies of being able to share gear and that kind of stuff in the same location. One, you don't have burnout, because not everybody's having to do super time if somebody's sick, or you don't have it fully staffed, because if three people are out of a staff of 20,
right,
it's a lot different than three out of five.
Absolutely.
But it's still three out of dispatch for the county at one point.
Having a bigger employee pool to draw from is a big deal for that,
yeah,
for sure.
So everybody may pull an extra hour or two instead of extra days. But the other thing, and I think this is probably as critical, if not more so, is that, okay, you've got 25 years experience. I've got 25 days.
Yeah.
Here comes a situation I'm answering and going, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I can yell out in the room, hey, guys, we got a big situation. I need help, either how to guide through it or if you want to take it.
Absolutely.
And just having those various levels of experience. I mean, it's kind of like probably how you guys lay out in the fire station, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big deal, because there's always those weird situations that pop up that even the 25-year veteran hasn't, dealt with. So,
right.
Yeah, let alone the person that's been there for 25 days.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds, number two at Humboldt Bay Fire, or I guess one above the battalion chief.
Yeah.
At Humboldt Bay Fire.
Yeah. Right in that neighborhood anyway.
Yeah. Talk shop this morning being presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Bill, as you look at this concept of unified command, obviously, there's some areas that have got a whole lot more involved. You know, we've got the coasties.
Yes.
If it's an out, if it's an on the water thing. Okay, I suppose you could bring in the fixed airplane and say CHP or the coasties with the helicopter. How much does having those state and federal agencies represented and part of, and you throw in, I guess you could include the fire service. You're really crossing huge jurisdictional boundaries. Is that an issue or is that a non-issue?
For the most part, it's a non-issue because even, you know, I mentioned the incident command system that we use here in California. It's really become the national standard, and as such, CHP uses it, the Coast Guard uses it, and depending on the jurisdiction where the incident's at, if it's an incident within our city, yeah, the city of Eureka or the greater Eureka area, we'll be in command, but we'll have representatives from, you know, the stakeholders, basically law enforcement, EMS. They'll be there helping us out as well. If it's an incident on the water, but with also within Humboldt Bay, we'll be there with helping the Coast Guard out with their incident and vice versa. So we all, again, you mentioned earlier, speaking the same language, and that's step one. Step two is actually basically knowing how to stay in your lane. I'm not going to tell a coastie helicopter what to do. You know, I can request them and tell their representative what I need or what I want, but in the actual talking to the aircraft and whatnot, that's going to be up to them because I just don't deal with that often, and we need to make sure the experts are doing that.
So you have a team, so to speak, kind of gathered, or a command circle, if you will?
Yeah, we'll have every incident we go to, whether it's law enforcement or fire, we establish a command post. And that's going to be where the incident commander is located. And if in the case of a unified command, that's where all the representatives from the agencies will be at. And that way, they're there talking to their people on the radio and giving orders and commands.
Kind of circle the wagons all in one spot.
Really, it is. And a lot of times, you know, we mentioned earlier, you'll almost be back-to-back with the person. I'll be there with my command vehicle talking to the fire units. Law enforcement will be there with their command people doing their people. And that way I can just turn around and say, hey, so-and-so from law enforcement, we've got this going on. I just want to let you know that. And what are your operations right now? So that way we're in complete conjunction with each other.
So everybody's there. Now, what I think of some of the bigger fires in the area, Globe Imports is still the one that, you know, 3rd and G. That to me was the fire.
Uh-huh.
Humboldt Paint Factory. I mean, there was a number of others that were pretty significant. I think it was when Ken was chief. He said, you know, everybody has a fire
yes.
in their career.
Oh yeah,
that fire that you remember. But for me, it was that. What is the role, or what is the function, or what is the involvement of the property owner? Because, you know, if it's a wildland fire, okay, fine. You guys go knock your socks off. Okay, if it's a rescue, great. Somebody's probably with the family members, and thank you very much. But if it's a physicalness, like what we're talking about, or you own the adjacent buildings, or the guys across the street, so you may be involved, you may not be involved. What is their role, and how is that communication extended?
And that's a really good question because we depend heavily on the property owners, and it starts even before the fire happens with our inspection program, getting in and being able to pre-plan businesses and go, okay, if there's a fire here, how are we going to handle this? It points out hazards ahead of time. If we go to a paint store, where obviously where are the things stored, where are all the chemicals at? So the property owner lets us in there to be able to do that. And then if a fire does occur, we're able to basically coordinate with them, whether it's their building or the neighboring building. If the neighboring building's on fire, the property owner, so we don't have to break doors down. If they're there and they let us in, that's that much less damage that we cause. Because, you know, aside from life safety, our next biggest priority is property conservation. So the other thing with the property owners, if we have a fire inside of a business, talking to the property owner and saying, hey, where are your business records at? We do what's called salvage, where we try to go in, put covers over things, bring out computers if we can, things that have business records. We can coordinate with them and say, what can we do? Basically, where is your stuff that has to be protected?
You know? Where are the diamonds so we can get the good stuff out?
Exactly. So
yeah.
So they play a huge role in that. And just having them there to basically, you know, as the thing starts winding down, to be able to start transitioning the care of the property back to them for board up, for any number of different things that they obviously post fire.
All right, Mario's also. Now, there are some folks, I remember Dad and Mom had done this at the cabin. Unfortunately, it happened and it was executed to perfection. If it starts to burn, let it go. Don't want to deal with half a building or a third of a building. You know, it's going to get knocked down anyway. May as well let it burn and protect
it. Understood.
Is that something that a property owner could share with you either in advance or on the scene and say, Bill, yeah, protect everybody else. We're too far gone. Just let it go.
Typically not.
I know that kind of runs counter to your genetic code.
It does. It would really depend on the situation because especially in the city of Eureka where the buildings are so close and there's such low clearance between them, we have to put the fire out to protect the neighboring properties and whatnot. Typically, if we get there to a fire and it's beyond our capability and safety to put people inside of it, because we want to go inside the fire to basically get as close as we can to it to be able to put it out. If it's too far gone, we'll do what's called going defensive, and we'll fight it from the outside, which typically does burn the building down. But we're in our jurisdiction, we're going to put the fire out.
Probably more of a residential type setting where there's a separation of the buildings rather than a commercial.
The rural setting definitely changes things for sure, being out in the country. So,
well, I was thinking like in the middle of town, but you're just not common walls.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Save the right side of the duplex, will you? KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES business hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. As technology, as science continues to grow and evolve, is it making incident commands easier or more complicated? It's kind of like at some point you have too much information. I know that kind of sounds counterintuitive. In the old days, you were looking for it. Now it's like you got to sift through everything and figure out what really is germane to the situation. How is technology evolving as far as the response or in the heat of battle, so to speak?
Absolutely. You asked the question, is it harder or easier? And the answer is yes and yes. We have so much more information available to us nowadays. Everything from being able to, if I'm sitting at the incident command post, I have a computer in my incident command vehicle. I can bring up Google Maps and I can see an overview of the block plan. I can see different sides of the building. Some fire departments are employing drones, and they can basically in real time be seeing what's happening on all sides of the fire. And you've got between the visual input that you're seeing from the information that you have, not only the computer stuff, but we have pre-plans that show basically the makeup of the building and whatnot. But then we have all the radio traffic coming in. It can really be, you know, sensory overload at times. And that's where the experience comes in of being able to, you know, as an incident commander, being able to make decisions and being able to, this is important, I need to deal with this right now, this can wait.
And sift through things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the information that we have now available to us is great. It's a huge asset to us, you know, having a computer program that can help us manage units on scene. But we also have to be disciplined, too, and not let the you drive the incident. The incident doesn't drive you.
Yeah, and then the batteries die.
Absolutely. Exactly. I've never had a pencil and paper. The batteries run out on that. Right. So.
Now, the drone concept sounds intriguing because of being able to see everything top as well as the sides. Do some of those fly into a building? I mean, can you kind of drive them inside with a little light or something, or an infrared, so you can actually see what's going on before you send folks in?
I'm sure it's possible. I've not seen anything trade yet. I know the Los Angeles City Fire Department does have a little remote controlled vehicle that, for special instance where there's a hazard where they can't put people inside, they can use it to go inside and basically put fire out and actually fight the fire. It's not something that's widespread at this point. It's all very conceptual at this point, and not just conceptual, but
expensive.
Expensive too, very prototype. But you're going to see a lot more of that in the future in the fire service, I think.
I would think the drone thing would be something that would be really beneficial.
Absolutely, if it's a authorized drone by the fire department, not something that's, you know, because you hear the
stories.
No,
one of yours,
one of ours,
a real deal.
By us.
Yeah, that's, all red.
Yeah, so with
little hat on it,
flashing
yeah.
light. You know.
Yeah.
It's a huge benefit if you have something you can employ like that, not only for fire incidents, but think about hazardous materials. You have an overturned tanker truck with some unknown nasty leaking out of it. If you can fly a drone in there and get the placard information or gather information, you know, the more information you have to be able to act on something like that, is it's huge.
Or be on all sides of the truck, so if it starts to ooze.
Absolutely.
You know before somebody steps in it.
Or hit it in the storm drain or whatever it's doing.
Yeah. So. Huh. Drones aren't particularly expensive. Are the ones that you're talking about kind of like a little bit more advanced?
I've seen from fire departments, I've seen both the more advanced ones and the ones that are off the shelf. And typically, if it's in the fire service, tack another, you know, a couple $100 to it too, because those are expensive. So.
Yeah, well, and you won't need it real time. You're not filming to look at it later on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All righty, bud. Quiet weekend, okay?
I hope so.
All right. See everybody tomorrow morning.